domain. It is a small farming village called Berea Springs. With an emphasis on small, Berea is a humble village with a tight-knit community, one that brings peace to those settled down there and makes the young people of this town restless. So we will be, again, making characters. we will be making characters on air. And we just hope to have a lot of fun here. We hope that we can have some adventures, some maybe some mayhem as we continue. That's really all the world building that you guys are going to get right now. I know it pains you.
Yes, it's simply just, hi, we're on this continent, and we live in this small town that is ruled by this certain kingdom. Because that's part of the fun of it. You kind of world build, and so, like, you don't really know what it is yet.
Everything else has to be told through the story.
Exactly, exactly. And I have a lot of fun stuff planned for you guys, and I'm very excited to be starting this campaign.
Okay, so now, Casey and I have been thinking about characters a little bit, but we wanted to do the majority of the character making on air today because we think it's fun, and character making is, like, it's something that you talk through, especially with your DM or GM, and, you know, we just want to kind of share our process as well as the random thoughts we have as we make these characters that we don't really have a story behind yet, and so that we can make these blank slates for our story here.
Yes, so who would like to start? All I know from what we've talked about outside of this is they're going to be from the same village.
Whoa.
The village of Berea. Mm-hmm. And that's all they've told me. That's pretty much all I know about the characters that they're wanting to play. So I'm very excited to hear their ideas with everyone listening.
And just as a basis, we are going to use the 2014 core set of rules, which you can find for free online. And we're also going to start with characters at level 3 so that we can get subclasses, which, for those of you who do not know, that's okay because we can explain. So basically in D&D, just general character creation, you start with picking a class, and there are the main classes of your main casters, which are spellcasters, the magic users, of wizards, warlocks, sorcerer, and then you have your more of half-casters, as in they can do magic, but they have a proficiency in something more. So paladins, they do magic, but they also do weapons. And clerics do magic and healing and such. Druids do magic and shapeshifting. Bards do magic and music. Rangers do magic and animals. Also
and
like druids. Yes, and arrows.
And arrows.
Very much like druids, but they don't shapeshift into animals. And then you have your non-casters, which are more combat-based. And they're the tanks in fighting with Dungeons & Dragons. They will usually have the most hit points, move the fastest, and do the most damage, which covers your barbarians, fighters, monks, and rogues. Which rogues do not do the most damage, but they do move the quickest in most cases, or at least the sneakiest.
They're very sneaky.
Yes.
And for each of these classes, there is something called a subclass, which they're all called subclasses, but they're different for each of them. So for monks, it's Way of the Blank. Yes. And the blank is a different category, which determines different skills that your character can have, different proficiencies, other things. And I'm trying to think of another example. Paladins have oaths of stuff. Yes, druids have circles. Druids have circles of things. Oh, I know more. I swear. Rogues don't really have a something blank. Rogues are just, they're phantoms. They can be
assassins.
Was the psychic one? Psychic knife?
Like psionic blade.
Psionic blade is what it's called. Yes. Rangers have something also. What do rangers have?
Rangers are also just like Beastmaster. I don't remember the other ranger subclasses, but they're pretty cool. They give you different like animals or summoning abilities typically.
Yeah. But from there, you pick something called a background, which you can, there is, I have found a, just on D&D Beyond, I don't know, a free way to find all of the backgrounds so that you can just custom background whatever you want, really. And basically what it is if you have a character in mind, like say you're playing a rogue and you are specifically playing a criminal rogue, guys, guess what? You can play a criminal background. That's one of the main options. Or you can play a charlatan or an acolyte or a guide or a hermit or
town hero.
A town hero, soldier. There's one called athlete that's from the Greek D&D book that's called Mythos and something that I can't remember. And basically what these do is they help determine kind of like your background status and the skills that you would have gained from doing this. So like if I had a character who was a charlatan, they'd probably be better at performing.
And these backgrounds really help to kind of give a reasoning for specific skill buffs that you get with them. Mm-hmm. So they're not super, they are important, but they don't have a humongous impact onto your skill modifiers and things like that. But they can be helpful, and they kind of help round your character out for who they actually are based with their skills.
Yeah. And then from there, you get into your species. There are so many species. There are simply so many. And the majority of them have sub-races, and there's a lot. You can be a dragon. You can be a fairy. You can be a gnome, an orc, a tiefling, an Aarakocra. I don't know. For a definition's purpose, an Aarakocra is a bird person, basically. Like, you can play, like, 7 different animals, like, 6 different gnomes. There's like 25 different elves.
And that's not even getting into the homebrew stuff you can do.
There's so much homebrew.
You can do literally anything with it. So
there, you can do a lot. And that basically goes into the languages your character would know. Certain skills, so like dragonborns can breathe fire.
And they have resistance to certain elements.
Mm-hmm. Satyrs can mirthfully leap. I know that Aarakocra can fly, as can certain other races, like a Kenku or an Air Genasi, which in this case would be an elemental character. So an Air Genasi is basically just a being of air. But yeah, they determine different traits, which using the 2014 rule set, your species will determine more of your traits than your background will. But you can use either one on D&D Beyond and it will fix it for you so that you're not accidentally giving yourself too many traits if you accidentally use a 2014 and a 2024 rule set. And then you get into ability scores. Does someone want to tell the tomato thing?
I can tell the tomato thing.
We like explaining things with tomatoes because it helps us say it in a roundabout way that is pretty easy for everyone to understand. So ability scores are basically your base modifiers for anything, any dice you roll. So there's strength, dexterity, constitution, intelligence, wisdom, and charisma. And Casey's going to explain the difference with tomatoes.
Yes. So it's very easy to see what each of these things do because they can be a little not intuitive whenever you're first learning it. So strength is being able to crush a tomato. Dexterity is being able to dodge a tomato. Constitution is being able to eat a rotten tomato without losing your lunch. Intelligence is knowing a tomato is a fruit, while wisdom, because they are two different things in this, is knowing to not put a tomato in a fruit salad. And charisma is being able to sell a tomato-based fruit salad.
Truly. And, you know, my heart goes out to all the bards because I definitely wouldn't sell nor eat a tomato-based fruit salad.
It's a crime, actually.
It's a crime. Tomatoes are for ketchup, y'all.
And we know you love ketchup.
I love ketchup. But yeah, and that's really the main things you have to do to make your character. And you do not have to start out knowing all of these things. I definitely did not. I Googled them, and Google helps a lot. But I personally like looking at some of the pre-built stuff on Google, just out of curiosity. But my general rule when it comes to making a character is I think about the type of character I would like to play in this setting, whether it's like, oh, I need to avenge my family, or I'm a happy little orc who wants to go on adventures and perhaps find a animal friend companion in the future. Very different characters. And for those different vibes, I would pick a different class because I personally vibe check every class. I don't know if y'all do that also, but each class has a certain oomph to it that I like to bring to my character. And so Googling helps me figure out the best way to bring that oomph without just finding the most broken character on the internet that someone spent way too long trying to fit in a rule set. So specifically so they could do broken things, because that's not the point.
Which, this is where we even differ a little bit. Everyone has a different method of how they choose their character. So how I usually choose mine is I think, what cool thing do I want to be able to do in this campaign? Whenever I think about if I know what type of campaign we're in, I'm like, okay, do I want to be able to punch a lot? Do I want to be able to do cool magic things? Do I want to be able to make everyone my friend? I think about what ability I want more before I think, oh, this is what I actually want to do. So that really drives mine. And then I'll build my character around what I think I'm going to have the most fun with first. And then I like to build my backstory and what that character's personality is actually going to be like when through the class and species that I choose.
See, I don't do either of those things. I just think, how can I add the most spice to my character? And then I go from there. So there's really a lot of different ways you can go about making a D&D character and playing them. But honestly, there's no wrong way to make a D&D character. It's mostly just figuring out what works best for you and what you are comfortable playing.
Which for a lot of people, they do not want to play a magic caster. Because let me tell you, if you play a half caster, you've got to read a list of 20 spells just to pick the spells. And then you got to know how to use all of them. If you're a full caster, that list triples, especially with levels.
Yes. So that person that she's talking about is me. I just like to punch things.
She really likes to punch things.
I like to break rules with magic.
Both things will be done in this campaign.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes.
I will bring forth magic from the heavens to strike down my enemies.
And Casey will punch things.
And Casey I will punch things, and I will punch them very quickly.
And very hard.
Yes. So, do we want to take turns starting to build our characters? And then after that, we can talk a little bit about the vibes of our characters and the vibes that we're going to bring for this campaign in general.
Sure.
Yes. Well, I'm not making a character today, but I will be putting my input on everything you guys say. Don't worry about that.
Yes. So I will begin. So I really like to start with knowing what class I want, and then I'll figure out what subclass I want. And from that, I figure out what species I'm kind of feeling playing with it. So I know that I want to play a monk because I would like to punch things. It is my favorite class. It's pretty simple. Monks are interesting because they're not magic casters. However, they do have key points, which brings an interesting dynamic to where you can have extra abilities or do more things through spending key points, which is very similar but not the same to using spell slots as a magic caster. But it's still a way to keep track of some extra stuff you can do without it being too blown out of proportion. And that usually scales with level. So if I'm correct, we are starting this campaign as level 3.
Yes, we are starting as level 3. So babies, but not too baby that you can't do stuff.
Yes. So I am...
And the levels do go up to level 20 for those that don't know.
Yes. Though you don't ever actually make it there.
Yeah, level 20 is like divinity status in D&D. It's like crazy. Combat takes like hours. So we are not going to get up to level 20.
No, that truly becomes insane, and you have a character sheet the length of a phone book. So currently, I'm looking at my proficiencies. I'm thinking about what I really want to do with this character. So I'm thinking acrobatics. I'm thinking athletics. And then I also get to choose a musical instrument or artisan tool. So where you get with these proficiencies and these different skills that you're having is based in that strength, constitution, wisdom. Those things affect these things. And proficiencies mean you just get a little boost in it. And you can also do that for specific items. So now I'm just scrolling through this, looking, what vibes am I feeling currently? And I think for this one, I want woodcarver's tools. Because I'm thinking about what I can do with this character as I'm choosing this stuff. And then I look at my monastic tradition, which is the subclass for this one. And it seems that we use D&D Beyond to build our characters. And it seems that mine is having a little bit of trouble pulling things up currently. So I will go ahead and pass it to Kennedy to begin hers.
Okay, guys. So I have been looking at both half-casters, which would fall under the paladins, clerics, druids, aka characters who do magic, but that's not their only thing, and the main casters. And I believe that I am going to play a paladin, but I think what I'm going to go for in the end is what you would call a sorcadin, which is a sorcerer paladin. But I'm going to put my first 3 levels into paladin.
I'm sorry. Can you say that word again?
A really sorcadin.
Quick? A sorcadin?
A sorcadin.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. That sounds like so much fun.
Have you heard of a padlock?
I have heard of a padlock.
I would love to play a padlock. For those of you who have not heard of a padlock, that is a paladin warlock. If you couldn't tell, I fancy paladins.
She loves playing her paladins.
They hit things hard and do magic. And they can heal, which, you know, that's a great trait to have. So yeah, let me go back to this.
And while both of them are loading stuff on their laptops, I will just say that you are listening to KHDX 93.1 FM, Conway, Arkansas, We're KHD20. We are currently making D&D characters for a campaign that we hope to play within the show. So,
yeah. So now that I've picked Paladin, guys, this is when we go back and Google oaths, okay? And let me tell you, I have read this list so many times, but I like to read it every time because it reminds me of the vibe, and that's what I go off of, is the vibe.
Let's be vibes so are very important.
Vibes. So, yeah. So, paladins have a general list of stuff. They have Oath of Conquest, Oath of Devotion, Oath of Glory, Oath of Redemption, Oath of the Ancients, Oath of the Crown, Oath of the Watchers, Oath of Vengeance, and Oath Breaker. So, the way that these go is it's basically, with Paladin Oaths, it's what you've decided you're going to dedicate yourself to. So, Oath of Redemption is you are trying to redeem yourself or your village or something because of some reason or another. And that's like goody two shoes paladin is Oath of Redemption, if you were to put them in categories. Oath of the Crown is you have dedicated yourself to protecting the royalty of whatever region you are in, of whatever world you are in. Oath of the Ancients is more based on religion and the gods or eternal beings of whatever, again, whatever world your DM has built, which there are plenty of pre-built worlds if you are just looking to try something, but it is always fun to have your friends make it and yes. Figure out where to go from there.
And this world specifically is very much build as we go. So I have a general idea of their starting point, and then I will be building a lot of it as we, as the characters make decisions. So that includes if they want oaths or religion tied to their character.
Mm-hmm. Which we will both probably do. Let's be so for real.
Yes.
So,
They're very intently looking at their laptops, trying to make decisions. So I will just say that as a DM for this, it's not going to be super serious. We're going to try and keep things light, maybe comedic. It might lean into more serious at times because that's just how D&D goes. It's very much a storytelling outlet for us, so we're really going to lean into that aspect of this podcast.
Technical difficulties.
Just a little bit.
I'm thinking, let me make sure that I'm doing this right. I'm thinking I might go with the goody two shoes paladin, which is why I'm calling it that, is because I figured that might be what I play here. So I'm thinking I might go with the Oath of Redemption because it gives a lot of versatility with magic, but it also gives healing options. And, you know, there's always my favorite thing in the 2014 rule set, Divine Smite.
Oh, yes. You love your divine smiting. Hey, does a lot of damage.
I can triple smite people, and I like that. So,
both of my players like hitting things, and they like hitting them as hard as they physically can.
Oh yes.
So, it'll be interesting the enemies I come up with to circumvent their abilities to hit things very hard.
You see, we may have to hit things, but that does not go as well when we are trying to, you know, talk to people and charisma our way out of things.
We are not picking very charisma-based classes.
Which,
per se.
Paladin, the charisma is, is the spellcasting focus, which is something I did not talk about earlier. There is such a thing called, or not such a thing called, but with casters, they usually have, there's usually, for each class, there is an ability score that you really want to go for. With half casters, it gets more difficult. So with monks, you're going dex all the way. With wizards, you're going intelligence all the way. With bards, charisma. Paladins, you need charisma and strength. I don't know what rangers need.
It's mostly dex for rangers as
mostly
well.
Dex. Rogues is mostly dex.
A lot
Barbarians
of dex
is constitution strength is kind of what you want to go for. I believe sorcerers is also a charisma based class.
That would make sense to me, yeah.
And then clerics is wisdom as your spellcasting focus. Oh, I gotta think of all of them now.
Artificer?
Dude, artificer, it's dex intelligence, pretty much. But let me tell you, you can get real up there. You can get real up there if you roll good. And we don't... So, when you're choosing ability scores... When you're doing ability scores, there are many ways to do it. You can roll, I believe it's 4 or 5 D6s, which is what you would be considered your normal die, what you find in your Yahtzee box. And you would add all those up and then take the lowest one off, and that would be your score. But what we like to do, within reason, is on D&D Beyond, you can just click a button and it'll roll all of them for you, because sometimes it is hard to come by that many D6s, and math is hard, people. So what we like to do is roll on our computers for this. I know we're talked about old fashioned at the beginning and now we're back to computers. I know. And we like to roll in there, and we roll 9 times, even though there are 6 abilities, and we pick the 6 highest of those 9 scores. Within reason, we do show the DM first, and if someone rolls a crazy number, aka like a perfect 18, they don't get to use that.
Or if they roll like a 7, I might be gracious and be like, re-roll that.
Yes.
But
'cause the way ability scores work is... The median is a 10, because that's just the middle. The highest you can get in each score is a 20. What this means is basically anything above a 10 is an add. Anything below a 10 is a subtract. So if you have 9 in intelligence, you have a -1 modifier to intelligence. If you have a 14 in charisma, you have a +2. So it goes in even numbers. And if you have an odd number on the low side, it rounds down, aka you get the bad. If you have an odd number on the good side, it also rounds down, so you don't get the extra. But, you know, that's okay because we min-max here.
They do. Expect some crazy scores. I don't know how they do it. When I build characters, I have, like, decent stats. There's going to be some crazy stats rolled.
That's our goal, is to make the GM's life as hard as possible.
Yes, they love doing it.
Yep. It's a collective effort.
Okay. I have been able to get my D&D Beyond to work again. It is a wonderful resource. It can sometimes be a little finicky with when it wants to work, however. So I'm going Way of the Open Hand. And so as such, that basically means I'm able to push people with an open hand.
Smack them.
Exactly. So that makes it very fun because not only can I punch them, I can also knock them prone. I can push them backwards. There's a bunch of fun effects that you can use with key on that one. And then so I'm choosing my...
What's key, Casey?
Did you explain it?
Casey, what's key?
I believe I did explain key and how it's similar to spell slots, however not the same. But I can further explain. So key with monk is, as stated before, very similar to spell slots, except it's not magic per se. It's a focused energy is how they focus it with monks. So monks are not spell casters. They are not magic users, but they have a fun little extra element that they can play with. So ki can be used to do things like heal people, to deal extra damage, to do things with, like, especially your subclass that you choose as monk heavily determines what you are able to do with your ki. So with, like, open hand technique, that's where I'm able to do something called fury blows, which is where I get to punch things even more. And I can do something, and I can use my ki to, without expending an extra action, knock a person prone, use a strength saving throw, or they have to be pushed away. So it just allows me to do extra physical things most of the time, which I can also heal, deal extra damage. It can make things magical attacks. So there's a lot of things that damage type matters. And the unfortunate thing about monks is that it's very martial based. So it's very physical, blunt damage and bludgeoning damage. And it's not considered magical unless if ki is used. And there are many things that can only be hurt by magical attacks. But that is a way to get around that. So we now see our background. We talked about that earlier, what that can mean.
What backgrounds are you guys thinking of at the moment?
I am thinking, I don't know what it's called. Hold on, let me look.
Have you also figured out your oath?
Kind of I'm doing Oath of Redemption.
Right, oh, right. Yes.
And I think I am going, oh my goodness, where is it? I know it's here.
Casey, do you know your background?
I'm currently looking at it, and I am stuck between, I think, either Acolyte or Soldier.
You should go Soldier.
I'm thinking Soldier.
So that I can go Acolyte.
You can go Acolyte. You can have it. I like that the Soldier aspect.
Perfect.
Wonderful.
I think that is a very nice blend and will be very cool going forward. Yeah.
Yes. And you get a tool proficiency most of the time with your background. And so, like, I get to choose a gaming set, which means I'm better at that game now. So I can challenge Kennedy's character to, let's see what I want to choose. I'm thinking right now, I like the idea of darts being what I'm good at. So I could challenge Kennedy's character to darts if we're in a tavern or anything and potentially beat her and have a fun moment out of that for myself.
Yeah.
Be able to gloat a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. I mean, it's true. I haven't even looked at my stuff yet. Let's be so for real, guys. I'm actually looking at spells right now. Casey, don't gotta worry about that. So with Paladin, at level 3, I only get 4 spells that I get to pick. Because I should have some already known spells, I believe. I don't know where they are. They'll be here eventually. But I get to pick spells. And so the majority of the spells I've got right now are, like, bless and ceremony and detect magic or other things. But the best spell are my smites. Guys, if you play a paladin and you are not spamming smite, you're not doing it right. You're simply not doing it right.
Not Kennedy already shaming play styles. Wow.
Wow.
You have to smite as a Paladin.
It's only 40 minutes into this.
It's and like the same way you gotta kick the ball on the fourth down. You gotta kick the ball on the fourth down, you gotta smite as a Paladin. I don't know what to tell you.
A little unimmersion. We're being currently watched through the window of the radio studio by some of our friends.
Whom we actually play D&D with.
It's very disconcerting.
Yes.
But anyway.
So, I am thinking that I'm going to take, at this moment, I'm taking Thunderous Smite.
Thunderous Smite.
Yes.
Interesting.
2d6 thunder damage.
And, that's pretty good.
And a big loud noise.
So I should make enemies that are immune to thunder damage is what you're saying.
Absolutely. And I'm thinking that I might take Divine Favor as well. Yep, it's a bonus action. So that just allows me to do more damage every turn.
Yes. Oh, we should explain what actions versus bonus actions and reactions are.
GM.
Oh, yes.
What's an action and a reaction and a bonus action?
So actions are the main, like, part of your turn. They're, like, the main attacks with weapons. They're very strong spells, that kind of stuff. Bonus actions can be, like, you do something like hide or I think you can disengage as a bonus action.
I think that's
I don't know if that's
an action.
I don't know.
It depends on your class.
It depends on your class.
So some of them do depend on your class, but you can also do some spells as a bonus action, like some cantrips or weaker spells. And then reactions happen if you have, like, there's a very specific, I think it's a Goliath trait where it's like the like armor, if you take a hit, is that
yes,
Goliath trait?
It is, yeah. Stone skin.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's called that, but it is a trait of a Goliath. And basically when you take a hit, you can use this reaction and make the damage less by like a D6 or two.
Yeah, so
which
there's
is very helpful. And for monks, you can usually, you can either catch a projectile,
mm-hmm.
and if you roll high enough, you can throw the projectile.
Yeah, so there's a lot of stuff you can do with reactions, bonus actions, and actions. A lot of it is like based off your class, based off what you have the ability to do, but most of it's pretty self-explanatory. So, and also I will use some like leeway. I don't 100% follow the rules all the time, but we will be mostly going off of what their character sheets say.
We do have house rules here.
We do play with house rules.
Yes. One of our house rules is when you're fighting and you crit, aka you roll a natural 20, which a natural 20 is the largest dice on the dice set is the D20. And that it means it's a 20-sided die and it has the highest possibility of getting either low or high. And so rolling a natural 20 is very fun. You will hear us get very excited if we roll a natural 20. And you will hear the depression if we roll a natural one. You'll hear it.
The anguish.
Yes.
So, but anyways, so basically when we roll a natural 20 during combat, that is, we're referring to hitting. So basically, when you attack something, you roll a d20. If you roll above that thing's armor class, which can either be because they're wearing armor or just their base armor class, which is usually not zero because you know, humans can get hit by X amount of things before they get damaged. Like a pillow, that's not going to be more. But if you get hit by a sword, you should be wearing armor. So if you beat the armor class, or if you meet it, we play meets it, beats it here. You hit. So if you roll a natural 20 to hit, you automatically hit the thing most of the time, unless the DM is really, really, really mean and did something really, really, really bad. And usually you are not level 3 if this happens.
Yes, it will be higher level for sure.
And just as a quick reminder, as we're talking about this, you're listening to KHDX 93.1 FM, Conway, Arkansas, and our show is currently KHD20.
Yes, and yes. We are talking about D&D at the moment, though yes. We will hopefully dabble in multiple tabletop games.
Yes, that is the goal, is to expand our horizons as we go along.
Yes, and so, yeah, when we crit, we take whatever max damage, which as a paladin is very fun because I can, like, triple smite. So if I crit on a triple smite, I take the max damage of that smite, which is a lot, and then I roll for it. So I would roll however I would roll on a normal hit, and I would add that number to the max damage. And that's how we do crits here, because we think crits are very important and very special. And, yeah, we want to see how you beat the dragon or the goblins in a trench coat or whatever.
Exactly. Crits are very fun because they're very rare, but when they do happen, they're very fun.
Yeah. So back to spells.
Yes.
So I picked all my spells. So I am going to go with Thunder Smite because lots of lightning damage. I'm going to go with Divine Favor because it helps me add another dice, upping my chances of more damage. I'm going to go with Cure Wounds because though I do have a Lay on Hands pool, I think it's still important to have a healing spell. And then I'm going to go with Command because it is handy in a cinch, especially if you have high charisma, which when I play paladins, I tend to prioritize charisma over strength, even though strength is second, which for a Sorcadin, I will be absolutely prioritizing charisma.
I love every time you say Sorcadin.
Sorcadin. I'm probably saying it wrong, too. Yes. It's probably the thing. Because I saw it online once, and I was never told how to pronounce it. So I'm probably saying it wrong.
For the people who missed the first explanation of Sorcadin, it's a sorcerer paladin multi-class.
Yep.
Casey, how's your character coming along over there?
I'm currently staring in the face the species list.
Oh, that is a scary list sometimes.
It is such a scary list. This may be not the most ideal way to think of this, but I often think of it as, what size do I want to be? So that means, what kind of animals can I mount and ride?
She loves being small, guys.
Small.
She loves being small.
Occasionally. I don't think I'm going to be small for this one, but I don't think I want to be large. However, it is very, very fun to be able to ride on the back of a Great Dane in a campaign.
She loves riding animals, guys.
It's so fun. You get a little friend. You get a little combat buddy. Sizes are it can be an important thing, or it can be not an important thing. It depends on your play style. So sizes can determine what kind of things you can, as we said, mount, which means, like, what can you get on and use as your mighty steed in battle? So you have tiny, small, medium, right?
Mm-hmm.
Large, and then giant?
I believe so, yes.
I believe that is all you can play, yes.
Yes. And so say you have a small character and you have a medium character there with you. You can hide behind the medium character if you're small. You have to be a size class lower than them to hide behind someone. And that is such a fun dynamic. And you can annoy the living daylights out of your GM whenever you do that. However, being large has its advantages too. Like, you have reach. You have a lot of buffs come with that. But often you might be a little slow too. And if you're smaller, you might be a little bit faster. So there are some things that size can determine. So it's just something to take into account as well.
Do we want to talk about how certain sizes can throw the small sizes?
I believe we should.
Because that's a very fun game mechanic.
Yes. So, and this is something that we have experimented with outside of actual gameplay as well, as far as like thinking and concepts of this would be a cool thing to do. If you have a size class smaller than someone, especially the more size classes below, the easier and better this is going to be. You can willingly fail rolls, like saving throws in this. And so there's something called a grapple, which is where someone can basically restrain or pick someone else up. And something you can do with that is if you had, say, a Goliath, and you had a dwarf.
Or, you know, a halfling.
Or, you know, or a halfling.
We haven't thought about this at all, guys.
We totally have
not. We definitely do not have like a 7'10" Goliath and a 3'2" halfling in one of our parties.
It's totally not the two people.
It's totally
with me.
Not me and Casey playing the said Goliath and halfling respectively. I couldn't imagine.
Not. Definitely not.
No. And something that you can do is if the said Goliath would pick up said halfling and the halfling willingly failed its saving throw to be picked up, the Goliath then could make, say, a strength check or athletics check or even an attack roll to throw said halfling at something or someone. And that's especially fun when the said small thing is a very punchy class.
Yes, they have thought about this a lot, though I've never seen it in an actual campaign before. They have discussed throwing the halfling character many a times.
Many a time.
And the halfling character is a monk, and monks hit very hard.
Yes.
Yes.
So, they are still poring over these character sheets.
I'm actually finished over here, I think.
Oh, yeah?
So, yes, while they were talking about, tossing things. I think I'm finished over here. So I like to go for the gruffier races. You can ask anyone who's played D&D with me.
Yeah.
I've played a Goliath. I've played an orc. I have yet to play an elf. They're far too refined. No.
No, they are. They are.
They are
we can
very
admit
refined.
It.
But I tend to go for the strength classes anyways. Strength spellcasting classes. Not the monks. And so I tend to go for that stuff. So I was eyeing Bugbear, but as some of the people hopefully listening know, Bugbear is kind of the thing you do. It's like the meta class if you're trying to go for a cracked strength character. I'm like, I don't want to go for that. Plus, I don't think a bugbear would just be in the middle of this village and be an acolyte. So, but you know what I do think would? this the still large and gruffy creature, but who is sweet? The firebolgs.
Ah, firbolgs. Firebolgs.
Well, there's no E. So okay, I don't know.
Just imagine the E.
You're
there.
Right.
Just imagine.
Firbolg. I don't know how to say it, guys. I'm going to pronounce a lot of things wrong, and you're going to have to deal with me, and I'm sorry.
I think we all are going to make mispronunciations. See, it just happened.
Yeah.
And, you know, we'll try and fix it. We might just breeze over it, but, you know.
Perhaps.
Firebolg would be a very good character to play.
Yes, so that's what I'm going for. And then with that, I have selected the languages of Goblin because, you know, firebolgs, they may not be goblin-esque like your typical hobgoblin or bugbear even, but they feel like they belong in a subset of that category, and I feel like I would be able to interact well with those. So, and then I have also chosen, I think I'm going to go with Primordial instead of Celestial, but I might change that in the future, trying to figure out the best way of talking to the gods and such as an acolyte. And then I think I am going to go with Draconic because I have been begging to our DM to finally see a dragonborn in one of these campaigns.
She has been. A lot of our campaigns that we've played in the past have been like, oh, dragons are really
they've
like
been dragonless.
And Kennedy is really, really wanting.
I want a dragon.
So we will be having dragons in this campaign. Don't worry.
Yay, dragons. But yeah, so I rolled my stuff.
Yes, what stats do you have?
I've rolled my stuff, and the base stuff is 15 in strength, 14 in dex, con, and wisdom, a 12 in intelligence, and a 16 in charisma. But with my additives from my class and from my race and other such, and I have a 16 in strength, a 14 in dex, con, and wisdom, an 18 in charisma, and a 12 in intelligence.
Nice. So kind of balanced. Not
kind of balanced, but you can see what I'm aiming for.
Yes, not terrible.
Yes.
Could be much worse.
It could be much worse. And then I intend to use... I need to fix my inventory. Basically, something you do before playing is you go through and add items that your character would have. And so one of the items my character has will be a Morning Star, which, y'all, I'm going to be so honest, the most experience I've ever had with a Morning Star is in the video game Grounded. So, but I can describe, it's basically the equivalent to a mace, except it has spiky bits. So people who see a mace that has large spikes on it, that's actually a Morning Star. And the mace is just the circle bit with no spikes. So I'm going to have a Morning Star, which it keeps trying to give me an expelled one, which is not what I want. And then I'm going to have, oh goodness, if I can find it again. Because I think it's a halbert is what it's called, which it's basically a long axe, but not a big axe, just a long axe. And that those two handheld weapons are what I'm going to be using for the majority of my smites. And then I'll have some javelins that I can throw, but I will mainly be doing hand-to-weapon combat, as that is how paladins smite. Unless you can find yourself a handy-dandy rune knight who has cloud rune, and then perhaps you can smack him who's standing right next to you. And then he can use that rune to direct it 60 feet away, which we have not tried yet, but I think we should.
This is them. This is Kennedy again talking about the campaign with the Goliath and Halfling. We also have a fighter in that campaign who has the Cloud Rune, and we have not tried that. That would be
and he
crazy.
And I have discussed how I could hit him for 50 damage, and he could shoot it 60 feet away. And you know, we've yet to try it, but we have it in mind.
It feels like we're plotting for other campaigns.
We are plotting. That's what you do in D&D, is you exactly. plot for everything at yes. all times.
It's just a whole giant plot is it's how plot. I could describe D&D. It's
absolutely. All yes. plot. Definitely.
So I have just picked my race and my ability scores. And so I'm going to go pretty basic with my race, but I have a fun idea for the character based on it. So I'm just going to go Wood Elf. I get a good little bit of a dexterity buff. Dark Vision, of course.
Love Dark Vision.
All of that super fun stuff. And so I just rolled my ability scores. And so this is one where I'm not sure exactly where the vibes are at for level 3. And so, for instance, my dexterity score is currently 19. I don't know exactly how. There might be some times where it's like, that's a bit much. So this is when you confer with your DM and ask. So I'll just go through everything that I have mm-hmm. so you can go see where things are right now. Because I don't have a negative on a single one of them currently. Strength is 11, dexterity is 19, constitution is 14, intelligence is 13, wisdom is 13, and charisma is 11.
I would say... Here, how about we do it this way? Take 3 of those points from your 19 and put them somewhere else.
Gotcha.
That way you still get to keep all your stuff, but it levels down that 19 just a little bit.
Yes.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. And I will take that. That helps even some of this out too.
Yes, yes.
And while Casey's doing that, I'm just going to... remind y'all that you're listening to KHDX 93.1 FM in Conway, Arkansas, and we are KHD20 doing tabletop games here at Hendrix.
And we are currently making characters for D&D at the moment.
Yes. And I am trying and failing to find if Firbolgs... Guys, I'm going to have to look up this pronunciation and I will fix it next time. If they have a specific naming pattern that they go for or if they go for something specific. Because I know that with satyrs, they try to do a more plant-based name because they are vegans. No. Just because that's typically how satyrs have gone with just general mythology and in D&D. With Goliaths, I don't know who came up with it, but you need 3 syllables for the first name. The middle name is some sort of nickname you were given, and the last name is your clan name and is 5 syllables. I don't know who came up with that, but I followed it because I thought it was very interesting, and I think it is fun to sometimes follow those actual rules and then make up all the other stuff. So I always like to look at the... character descriptions just to make sure there's not some naming thing that I can't use.
I will say I do think Firebolgs have a weird naming system.
From what I'm seeing, they don't.
I think I've seen it before.
But I don't know. Yes. Just looking.
So for right now, we're going to do a very brief intermission. We have a couple D&D Hispanic songs that we want to play.
Yeah, yes,
for Hispanic Heritage Month.
Yes.
Yes.